Where in hell can you go? Far from the things that you know. Far from the sprawl of concrete that keeps crawling its way. About 1,000 miles a day. Take one last look behind. Commit this to memory and mind. Don't miss this wasteland, this terrible place when you leave. Keep your heart off your sleeve.
Guppy Productions presents Series 3 of From Colchester to Sulawesi. Written for Cone Radio by Phil Boast and Paula Larcher. Episode 1 of 6. Holier Than Thou.
It's October, and the first rains of the wet season have arrived on our Indonesian shores. These are not yet the persistent heavy rain which we can expect in December and January, but the vast weather patterns which dominate to either side of the equator have begun to have their peripheral effect. We are fortunate here in that the inshore waters of our locale, which are flat and calm for the greater part of the year, rarely become very rough, even in the wet season. And there are only a handful of days each year when the dive boats don't take to the waters. This is all year-round diving, and there is no real high season for our particular and specialised kind of tourism. Indeed, people, whom we hope will include our future guests, often come here to escape the northern European winters, to bask for a time in the warm equatorial climate, and dive the ever-warm equatorial waters of Bunaken Marine Park. I'm getting to know the coral reefs around here better now, and to better understand and deal with the always unpredictable currents which can make diving more difficult, but which attract the larger denizens of the deep. As a general rule, if you want to see big fish, go where the currents are. And there are a few dive sites where the water is constantly on the move. I by no means dive every day, but take to the waters perhaps 2 or 3 mornings a week, not of course for the love of it, but primarily so that I can talk more knowledgeably to our guests over the evening meal and advise them as to which dive sites might best suit them. At least this is what I tell myself, and I can be quite convincing when I wish to be convinced.
Oh, my, 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 it's a beautiful world. I like swimming in the sea. I like to go out beyond the white breakers, where a man can still be free. Or a woman, if you are one. I like swimming in the sea.
Phil and I have quickly and naturally developed a demarcation of duties around the lodge. I mostly deal with the catering and make sure that we have everything that we need by way of fruit, vegetables and so on. I'm also getting to know Sulcher's cooking, which is consistently excellent, and leave the day's menu on a whiteboard for her when she arrives in the mid-afternoon to prepare the evening meal. The nature of the work means that there are no fixed hours of working for our staff. Sulcha has her rest time between breakfast and supper, so I usually cook lunch if there are any guests staying at the lodge during the day. Aris, our driver, sometimes works long days on tour, but other days only has to drop the guests to the dive centre and pick them up after diving. So it's all rather organic, but it's 7 days a week, and we must be aware of that. In my previous life, my special field of expertise was employment law, where strict terms of contract and working hours and conditions were rigidly enshrined and adhered to. Whereas here, there is nothing of that. It's more about common sense and making sure that the staff are happy in a more general way and are working about the same number of hours in any given week. That said, they all go about their work with enthusiasm and without complaint. I suppose in part because working at the big house gives them kudos and status in the village, and a steady and reliable income. Phil deals more with the infrastructure. If the water pump breaks down and there's no water, or the jeep needs an oil change, this is very much Phil's sphere of activity. So, in practical terms, we don't overlap very much, and this seems to work. We have lived and loved together for many years now, but we've never worked together before, or been together 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. And it's working out fine for both of us, which I suppose is no big surprise, but there it is, and it's good. Undertaking something like this, which is all new to us, and strange enough anyway, with the added stresses created by our situation with Oni, would quite soon expose any cracks or weaknesses in any relationship. But we seem to be watertight in all respects and are able to draw strength from one another where strength is needed. Where we share responsibility is in dealing with our guests in terms of personal interaction, where we bring our very different personalities to bear on the matter, which also seems to work well. And the fact that there are two of us means that if one of us needs a break or is having a bad day of it, the other is there to provide the presence and make sure that all is well.
The dealing with the guests thing is working out okay on the whole. I knew Paula would be good at it, being outgoing, sociable and gregarious by nature, but I was less certain about how I would hack it as a host. On the whole, I confess I'm surprising myself, although I've had a couple of early incidents from which to learn. On one occasion, we had a guest who was moving around the lodge at what seemed to me to be supernatural speed. Wherever I went, there was he. I would leave him in one room, and he would be there before me in the next. I mentioned this to Paula, who pointed out that the guest was in fact two people. We had identical twins staying, which made me feel rather foolish, particularly when Paula also pointed out that the person in his two manifestations was wearing completely different clothes. I know well enough that my powers of observation in this regard leave something to be desired, and here was a case in point. And then there was the business of the three German guests, two men and a woman. The woman and one of the men sharing a surname. Using my powers of deduction, I concluded that they were a married couple and a friend, and so I directed them to their rooms accordingly. Trouble is, they kept going to the wrong rooms, and I had to gently but persistently tell them that, no, this is your room. Unusually for guests from Germany, they spoke little English, but in the end one of the gentlemen got quite irate and said, "I want to sleep with my wife." Turned out that the man and the woman with the same surname were brother and sister, and the married couple had retained their respective surnames. All of our guests have to complete a guest registration form, and under occupation these guests had all written evangelist. So we assumed that they were three pious and religious people, perhaps priests or similar. They didn't look or seem to be particularly priestly, and they drank heavily in the evenings, but our assumptions were reinforced when they told us on Sunday morning that they would not dive on this day. We assumed that this was for religious reasons, and so, being ever mindful to our guests, I asked them whether they would care to take morning service at the village church. They seemed surprised, but agreed, and duly attended the roughly 3-hour-long service, of which they would have understood nothing. Only later did it transpire that they had filled in the forms wrongly, and that none of them were in any way religious. The lady was a nurse, one of the gentlemen was a carpenter, and the other was a train driver. By the end of their stay, we were firm friends and had laughed about initial misunderstandings, and I had learned not to make assumptions until I was more sure of my ground. But still, the odd mistake notwithstanding, I'm enjoying the interactions with our always various guests, and somehow managed to keep the lodge functioning fairly well on a practical level. Everything works here most of the time, and things which break or go wrong can be fixed eventually, but there is no yellow pages or similar, and it can take a couple of days to get an electrician or plumber to turn up to sort out any malfunctions. But still, it's where we live, and we must learn to live with it in all of its manifestations. Power cuts are quite a regular thing. Trees fall on power cables, which can take a while to fix, and whilst we can live without aircon or running water for a few hours, We don't expect the same for our paying guests, so we have bought another generator which keeps things going well enough.
We haven't heard anything yet from the police about our documents. It's been a couple of weeks now since we paid for the services of the enforcers, who are supposed to be getting them back for us. But we have no news and no documents. So Phil once again phones Amelia, our English-speaking police inspector. She tells us not to worry, it's being taken care of. So we'll just have to wait and hope that it gets sorted soon. In the meantime, if our guests ask us why there are always policemen at the lodge, we try to make light of it and tell them that it's quite normal to have a couple of policemen around at Indonesian tourist resorts, just to be on the safe side. It's not convincing, and they're not convinced. But this is just another dimension in this always multidimensional and often strange life that we have chosen to live.
Oh, motherland, cradle me. Close my eyes, lullaby me to sleep. Keep me safe, lie with me, stay beside me. Don't go, don't go.
Find out what happens next when we return to the adventures of Phil and Paula and Bahowo Lodge in the next episode of From Colchester to Sulawesi.